Yeah, so I mean, something about that just seemed wrong. So glad to hear. I heard a couple of different tweets on this. I think it was Jason who said that ironwood is just a reference to the strength of the wood. It's one of the hardest of the hardwoods. There is no actual iron in it. But I knew that. I mean, we all know that instinctively, I think. But it would be cool, though, if suddenly, like, iron could just grow like that in the middle of a tree. Wouldn't that be neat? I think the part of the story the previous caller told about chainsaws malfunctioning, I think that's true. And I think that there are people who have said that there's certain hardwoods you can just saw away at them forever. And if the chain isn't really sharp, if the little claws in the chain haven't been sharpened in a while, you can you the tree can win in tree versus chainsaw. The tree can win. Well, it's going to be you versus time. If we get you in before this hour is out, we'll get you on the air coming up for open lines. One more to go, and we gave you all the numbers. Where are you going to take us coming up next on Coast to Coast AM? This is Ian Punnett. Oh, we were just talking to somebody from the Bronx. Let's go with Joe from the Bronx on Coast to Coast AM. Joe?
Ian, how are you?
Doing so well. Where are you going to take us?
When Jim was on earlier, Jim Carroll, I wanted to ask him a couple of questions. One pertaining to what he would define as a genius, and so I'll just direct that question to you. And also, what are his solutions for helping TBIs regain their ability or mental ability? That they had prior to the brain injury.
Well, he did talk a little bit about that, and he said, that he works with them just to continue that every day you just keep working on it and you'll never know how good it'll get. And not to be willing to accept a diagnosis that says you'll never be as good as that. Have you had a TBI?
No, but I know someone who has, and sometimes their memories for things like acronyms or whatever aren't as attuned as they used to be.
So I had a really good friend who had a TBI, and I think about him all the time. And he'll never be able to go back, very likely, to being able to write code off the top of his head, which is what he used to be able to do. However, at the same time, to make the point, he goes for therapy like twice a week, and he continues to do all the reading he's supposed to do, and he does all this engagement, and he's come so much further back to the person that we knew. And then there'll just be moments, and I don't know, Joe, if you experienced this too, where my friend will just go, "Oh, I don't remember what I was saying. I remember in the old days I used to be able to not have to do this, but
A
I'll have
lapse
to
of
stop."
memory.
Yeah, and he's aware of it happening. And the sad part is he's aware of it not having happened in the past, but now he does really well, and then suddenly he kind of hits a pothole, in his memory, and there's
Okay.
nothing he can do
And
about it.
also, Ian, what would you refer to as a genius? What's your definition of that?
I'm so glad. Yeah. So I do. I'm very curious about that. And I think that many more people are geniuses than scores or grades would ever indicate. And I think that can be some areas where people are selectively genius in what they do. And I don't mean that just in terms of like savants. I just mean that I work a lot with students, and sometimes, they're not very good at one thing, but my God, what did they come up with this other thing? So I like to think of geniuses in terms of people as people's ability to make connections more than the average person. So
Okay.
it's not much of a quantitative thing, like, 137 IQ, but it's a qualitative thing that says that at some level their mind works to make connections in ways that other people just don't see how they snap together. What do you think of
Interesting.
that?
Oh, I think that's very interesting. I mean, there are a lot more geniuses among us than we're led to believe.
And it's interestingly enough, so I work a lot with people who both are at a university setting. And for example, I have a lot of friends who just went to high school and maybe junior college. And many of them, they just don't know how smart they are. And I keep telling them, dude, if you wanted to, you could knock out a four. Oh no, I could never get a 4-year degree. Oh my God, could you ever get a 4-year degree? And I think some of it is the little roadblocks we put on our own selves, or the little shame voices that we hear in our head that says, don't try to do that. And whatever it is that holds people back, it's wrong, because there's a lot of geniuses out there, and they're plumbers, and they're great plumbers, and we should be lucky to have them. But if they were somehow rerouted away from a world that they could have been in, if they'd wanted to. Don't you
think?
Yeah, I appreciate that. No, it was a good call. Let me go to Jane, who's in Biloxi on Coast to Coast AM. Jane?
Hey, Ian. Thanks
hey.
For taking my call.
Yeah, open lines.
Okay. Listen, I had a comment about one caller talked about how we used to have green stamps and all.
Yeah.
And I went to open a bank account, and I was kind of joking around like, okay, do you guys have toasters or whatever?
Right.
And this gal, she's like, oh my gosh, I heard about that way back then, you know?
Right. But that's so funny. So like there's the same type of incentivizing goes on all the time now, right? It's just, but it used to be at a very grassroots, like neighborhood level, where that if you bought, filled up your car with gas, you got a little plastic Sinclair dinosaur bank. Right?
So true. Oh my gosh.
Right? Or you get the little Esso truck, or you get whatever. And that used to be a way, because we the way we interacted with people was much more face to face. And the idea of getting somebody to come into the bank and sign up, and you get a toaster, or you whatever,
right,
or get your pick, you know, depending on how much you deposited, you could even go for some other prize, like a game show. And I think that's so, but that same type of incentivizing goes on all the time. It just happens to be on online and in television advertising.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
I'm from the farm in Arkansas originally. So this is kind of baffling me. I'm in my 50s now, and my husband doesn't even have a smartphone, so we're kind of slowly progressing. We're like, you know, kind of scared children, you know.
Well, you got to get a smartphone. You got to get a smartphone. Just jump, make that jump. I mean, that makes life so much easier. I'm not saying everything's a trade-off, right? We all know everything's a trade-off, but smartphones are like the best trade-off I ever made 15
really
years ago.
Is.
Whenever I go.
Yeah, I just did it like a year and a half ago. So I'm kind of, you know,
Now you know. It's kind of cool.
I really love it. And my husband laughs every time, you know, say, okay, Google, you know, blah, 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 you know, what I want to do or where I want to go or a recipe or anything just at your fingertips, which is so, so convenient. So neat, and you just fall right into it. Like, oh my gosh, how'd I ever live without this kind of
exactly? And it doesn't mean that there aren't downsides to it, but by and large, I mean the payoff is way bigger than that. Thanks, Jane. That was fun. Let me go to Christopher in CR on Coast to Coast AM. Christopher, how are things in Cedar Rapids?
Well, they're doing very fine, Ian.
Did you get any flooding with all the flooding that was going on in Nebraska?
Well,
and Iowa?
We had a little bit, but it seems to have died down now.
I remember a year driving through CR when you had that major flood.
Back in 08. Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. I'd never seen anything like it.
That was the first time I've ever seen a flood, actually. That was around when I was 10 years old, actually.
Right. I used to go up to Cedar Rapids to see the single-A baseball team that was there. But it just so happened that I was driving through Cedar Rapids right after the flood, and literally the water was just underneath the bridge we were driving over, which was very scary because it had a lot of water had gone underneath that bridge. But it's open lines. Where do you want to take us?
Okay, well, I just want to start off by saying, you know, it's an honor to be on this show. I had a little history with Coast to Coast, you know, usually with my dad. He would listen to George on some nights when he was driving to work. And one thing that always would terrify him was when George would be talking about shadow people, which is the jumping off base for my story. So years ago, I lived in an apartment. I was around 3 or 4 years old. And a couple of times I would see some figures, they're like shadowy figures. And the first time I saw it, I I was in the kitchen. And I was, you know, playing with some toys and, you know, just being a normal 3-year-old. Then I would see this figure from the corner of the doorway. And as I started to approach it, it would walk out of the doorway, and I would turn the corner, and it would be gone.
Yeah.
And that happened about 5 or 6 more times. And by the time we moved out of that apartment, later I found out that actually there were several murders that had happened previously in that same apartment building.
Hmm.
So I got to start thinking, you know, were these the spirits of the people who used to live here?
You know, there's another claim for that. We spoke a couple of months ago to a guy who had been doing research on doppelgangers, and the doppelganger narrative overlaps the shadow people thing. And so there are some people who claim the doppelgangers, like, are literally, it's like as if your shadow came alive. And so it's an avatar of your the outline of your body, and that's what shadow people come from, is from a poltergeist of you.
I think I could actually see that, because some of them I could tell were either young children, or some of them were young women and things like that, and who were walking around sometimes when I see them in my apartment. And you know, if I were to tell my dad, he would just be freaking out. Like, see, that's what George was trying to tell me. I was freaking out every time he would say something about that.
Right. Is your dad still with us?
Yeah, he's, he doesn't really listen to the show anymore. I kind of started, when I was started listening to it, here on Coast to Coast, so that he used to listen to it, and I kind of got him back into listening.
Well, I wish he'd be listening to you tonight talking about you and shadow people, but if not, you have to tell him that you were on. And thanks, Christopher. Appreciate that. Patrick's west of the Rockies in California on Coast to Coast AM. Patrick?
Yeah.
Hey, open lines.
Yeah, last week you had a caller call in, this, you know, from Sacramento area, that said he'd seen a big UFO in the air, about 74, 75.
Yeah.
Well,
I see the same thing.
San Luis Obispo County, which is on the coast just north of Vandenberg Air Force Base, which is in Santa Barbara County. And I think I seen the exact same thing in 1974.
Hmm.
Because
what was your experience?
Well, me and the friend were out hunting squirrels. And
what?
Yeah, ground squirrels.
To do what?
Eat them.
You didn't eat them.
Yeah, we did.
Okay. So pause for a second, but so would you shoot them?
Yeah.
Okay, and then you'd get a fire going, and you'd get a stick?
No, we'd stew them up.
You'd make squirrel stew?
Uh-huh.
Okay. How many squirrels would it take to make a good stew?
2.
Really?
Yeah.
There's that much meat on them?
Yeah, there's quite a bit. Those suckers in that area were about the size of small rabbits.
Okay. All right. So squirrel stew,
mm-hmm.
you were making that, but then what happened?
Well, we were sitting waiting, you know, for the squirrels to start coming, you know, out of their holes, and I'd been sitting there watching the sky for a while because I'd seen this silver blob just sitting there.
Now, are you all camoed out so the squirrels don't recognize you?
I was at the time, about 8 years old.
Okay.
So we were in very regular clothes. No.
All right, let's check it. So you're just and you have to sit there just very quietly and very still.
Yeah. Because these suckers didn't like being seen sometimes.
Well, not with a kid with a gun. So you looked up and you saw a UFO.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I know it was big because of the size of it, and I knew it was high elevation because below it I could see two jets flying north. And, I mean, they looked puny compared to this thing.
And so who did you tell?
Oh, when I went back to school, I told, you know, and they asked what we'd done over summer break or anything exciting happened. I said that. And, felt like the laughing stock of the classroom at the time because nobody believed it. They said, all you seen was a plane up there.
Right. But you knew better.
Yeah.
That's cool. And then how many squirrels typically in a summer would you shoot before you go back to school? What's that?
About eight.
That's all?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, cool. Appreciate that story. Did you save any of the tails and make hats out of them or anything?
I didn't, but another friend did tanning and stuff on them. So.
Okay.
Nothing really went to waste.
At 8 years old, I would have had those on my handlebars, I think. I would have put those streaming off the back. Very good. Thank you, Patrick. Appreciate that. Lance is in California, too, on Coast to Coast AM. Lance?
Hello.
Hey, we can get you in before the bottom of the hour.
Hey, cool, man. First-time caller. I love your show, man. Much love for your show.
Well, we're glad to have you. Where do you want to take us?
I don't even know where. I just wanted to call and...
Well, that's okay.
I'll let you guys, I'm sorry, a little nervous. Never called you guys before.
Just don't barf.
Okay. You got it, man.
Anything short of barfing, we're okay. So you get nervous, whatever. But if you start hurling when you're on the air, that would be gross.
I've always had psychic abilities my whole life. You know, my whole life I've always been able to do certain things. And I've blown people's minds, read people's minds. And it's always spontaneous. It doesn't seem to, it comes on maybe sometimes when you're being healthier or fasting or doing certain things.
What's the most bizarre thing you've read from a friend's mind?
Oh, the most bizarre thing I've read from, it's not really, it'd be like at work, people would be talking about you, and one time it was in a different room completely, and I just knew it. I could feel the energy.
Right.
Everybody has an energy. Everybody has an energy signature, and that's, I've even spoken to dead relatives, if you will, had many, many conversations. A lot of this stuff happened recently, actually. I wasn't quite aware of a lot of stuff, and then it's really strange. Out of the blue, out of nowhere, somebody or something said the word indigo to me. I said, what is that word? I've never heard that word before in my life. So I researched, I looked it up, and I looked up the whole indigo children phenomenon.
Right.
And I realized I fit every single characteristic in there since I was a kid. I've performed telekinesis. I've knocked over, only once, I knocked over a lighter one time, a big lighter sitting on a table. And I had two witnesses, they saw it happen. And it was just pure, it's a mindset. It's not like any kind
sure.
of, you don't force it. You just, it's pure intent and knowing. That's how it's done,
All right. We're coming up to the bottom of the hour. So when you talk to your dead relatives, do they ever spill the family dirt?
No. It's more of an energy feeling. That's how you know it's them. I haven't seen my grandpa since I was a kid. Yet I knew he came to. It was more of a warning. It warned me to not do something. And it's very. I don't know how it translates into words, but the words are just far and few between. So it'll be like.
Sometimes you don't need words. You just need a stern look, and that's all you got. Well, I appreciate that. Sorry about that. Out of time. One only half hour to go. Are you kidding me? Okay. Stand by. We'll give you the numbers for open lines next on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. And then also for all of the different conversations that are going on in open lines. In fact, Kathy wants to follow up on a previous call. So we'll let her lead off this last half hour of open lines next on Coast to Coast AM. In for George Norrie, this is Ian Punnett. So we start with Kathy on a wildcard line going into our last half hour of open line calls. So she has a follow-up on, was it Annie's call in Alabama talking about latex paint, Kathy?
Yeah. Yes, it was. I'm very allergic to anything with latex. I can't wear latex gloves, latex bandages. I can't get near latex paint. I have a serious allergy to it. So what right. she was saying is true.
Oh, I have no doubt that some people have. Yeah, I mean, there's no dispute that some people have latex allergies. I know of somebody who had problems. They had intimacy problems because they were using a latex condom, right? I mean, can you imagine there? Yeah, exactly. But I think her point was about like launching a major lawsuit and getting people, you know, to get on board with that. I mean, that's fine. It's just above my pay grade. I couldn't organize something like that.
I just heard the last part of her call. But I also wanted to comment on the guy that shot squirrels.
Yes.
And I wondered if he knew my husband, because my husband used to do that.
Yeah.
Shoot squirrels and rabbits and all kinds of things and bring them home and make me cook them.
Oh, did you have to cook them? Did you have to do the, did you gut them and everything?
No, he gutted them and he would take the hide off, but oh my God, it was disgusting.
Did it taste good?
Well, I don't know because I wouldn't eat it.
Oh, you would never eat the squirrel.
For him, and he would eat it. But yeah, he used to cook all that kind of stuff. It was disgusting.
No, wait. So, did you make a stew for him, or did you do did you fricassee it, or how did you do it?
I just boiled the meat and took it off the bones, and you know, he would eat it like that. I was. And it's so gross.
I guess it's no different than boiling chicken, but boiled chicken never sounds very appealing to me either, but interesting. I appreciate that. I know somebody who, thank you so much. I know somebody who's telling me about, what did they shoot? Like a possum or something in their backyard because they were a young married couple and they went to go eat it. But the fat content was such that when they tried to boil it away, it just like messed up their kitchen and burned on their stove. And for years, they were smelling their big possum experiment. Ooh, good name for a band. All right, Jim is in Indiana on Coast to Coast AM. Open lines. Jim?
Yes, sir. First of all, squirrel is delicious. You should fry it like chicken and make good gravy, too.
I'll take your word for it, buddy.
There's even a hunting season for squirrels.
Shut up. There is none. Not in my neighborhood. It's 24/7 around here. But what do you mean? Like some places they restrict your squirrel hunting?
Yeah, you have an actual hunting season. You have to have a license. And you go out squirrel hunting.
Where are they short on squirrels that they need to, right? Anywhere in the United States is there a squirrel shortage?
Well, I don't know that there's a shortage, but there is a season. In Indiana, you have a squirrel hunting season.
Okay. Well, I just wonder, what are the curbs? Like, they're afraid of, like, you know, because I understand that in terms of, like, deer, maybe. But squirrel, I would think that would be, like, something pretty much year-round. If you could see them, you could shoot them. Because, you know, if you eat them, they'll make more, right?
Well, yeah, they don't have... You got to be careful when you shoot them. You don't want to shoot them when they've got babies to take care of and that.
Well,
kind of
true.
Stuff.
And I'm not talking about shooting them like over your neighbor's house or anything. I just mean out in the woods. But okay, fair enough. So, but that wasn't why you called. So, Jim, it's open lines.
The 737 MAX 8 planes that were falling out of the sky.
Yeah.
I think that we need to take Boeing to task because they are disregarding the basic laws of robotics. Because these systems that control these planes are basically robotic, and they are ignoring the input of the pilot and harming the humans that are on board. These
planes
have five computers on board.
Right.
Five computers run that plane. You can't tell me that one of those computers doesn't know that the pilot is pulling back on the stick to try to get the nose up.
Yeah, this has been a very interesting story to read about what Boeing, what did they know and when did they know it? And then with regard to the FAA or Pentagon, because I hear the Pentagon's got a piece of this action too, is that they that at some point they just sort of said, well, you all figure it out. You tell us when everything's good and we'll take your word for it. And there's that kind of cozy relationship that obviously, you know, people are dying as a result of perhaps of this, you know, premature approval of this system. But don't a lot of pilots like all this automation?
Well, and I've got nothing against automation. Automation is great, but this system requires, if the automation goes bad and is trying to kill you, you have to find the manual switches and turn it off.
Right.
It shouldn't be that way. I mean, the computer knows, because you're just using basically an Atari joystick to fly this thing.
Right.
So the computer knows what you're trying to do, and if that goes against what it's trying to do, it should shut itself down and give you control, because you're the human.
Yeah, it's like HAL. It's like HAL in 2001 Space Odyssey, right?
Yeah, it needs to let go and let the human have it and stop fighting with you.
Yeah,
we'd have several hundred more people on the planet right now.
That's exactly right. And let Dave handle it. You know, don't stop the pilot. So, also be a good name for a band. Let Dave handle it. I like that. Let me go to Michael is in Greensboro, North Carolina, on Coast to Coast. Michael?
Oh hey, Ian, what's up? I love that you just played Insane in the Membrane. I really can't see George playing that to the music, but
I'm pretty sure George broke that record. I think if you go back to the beginning, I think back in 92, George might have been one of the first to play that. I don't know. I'm just a hunch. I could be wrong, but yeah, I'm with you. All right, so Michael, it's open lines. Where do you want to take us?
Oh, okay. I wanted to ask you about, please, you know, what's your take of all this extreme weather and the climate change debate and everything, and you know, whether or not you think that, you know, this is all natural climate changes or these are man-made climate changes that, you know, a lot of people are saying. So,
well, how do we separate them out to make them be mutually exclusive?
Okay. Well, I kind of feel that you know, overall I would say Mother Nature's in control, and that I think it's a bit arrogant for, you know, humankind and mankind to assume that, you know, we are changing the climate of the whole entire planet. I think we're definitely polluting it. But that we're totally in control, I don't necessarily agree with that.
Well, that's my point. So, but again, they're not mutually exclusive. So not totally control one way or another, but, you know, we know if you put a certain amount, if you raise the salinity of water, you're going to kill a certain number of fish, and you're going to suddenly make the water habitable to something which is otherwise being held down by a lower salinity in the water, which will now suddenly take over. We can see what happens with zebra mussels. We can see invasive species. So I think it's like any other kind of thing where we impact it. We're not in charge. We can't just flip the switches on it, but we can nudge nature, and we do all the time. And, you know, history shows again and again how nature points out the folly of men, that we, you know, we end up creating something which we can't control, and we don't even understand while it's happening, and we don't necessarily know how we did it. What do you think?
I would agree with that. I mean, you know, there's various theories. You know, I mean, you've had people on the program where, you know, some of the icebergs are melting, some are expanding. So, I mean, who's to say whether or not it's getting hotter or colder?
Well, but hold on. I think the thing about global warming is it's just getting more extreme. And that's what they were saying 10 years ago, is you're going to find these weather patterns are going to get more and more extreme. And that's the pattern that I notice. That's the one I see all the time. The hots get hotter, the colds get colder, the melts get meltier. You know, everything's getting a little, what we would have thought of is perhaps as being sort of a kind of stasis in the middle that was pretty consistent is now wobbly, and we don't know where that's going to end up. I'm not here to say it's only humans and we got to have the, you know, Kyoto Accord or whatever, but I do think it's unrealistic to think that we don't impact our environment. We see it in every other way. Why wouldn't we see it with the air? We see it in the ground, we see it in the groundwater, we see it everywhere. And we're unfortunately a little flagrant on that, I think. But really enjoyed the conversation. Thank you. I've got a few more minutes left. I want to try and get everybody in. Tom is in Arizona on Coast to Coast AM. Tom?
Yeah. I lived most of my adult life in Minnesota, and I would put up about 8 to 10 cords of wood a year for our wood stove in the wintertime.
Sure.
And there is no iron in ironwood.
Yeah, I knew that.
I'm gonna list the like four different types of trees here. Poplar tree is very, very soft wood.
Right.
But there's not much heat in it. Elm is very good for burning. The next hardest is probably going to be oak. And then the ironwood is very, very hard. I could probably cut down one oak tree or two oak trees and probably have to sharpen my chain.
Oh,
but if
yeah.
I took down one ironwood tree, that was it. I'd have to change chains.
Yeah.
And, it would get so cold in Minnesota sometimes, you get the fire going on the wood stove and you put elm in there and oak. But you put ironwood in there, and it's going to burn longer, and it's going to burn real hot.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I lived in Minnesota a long time. I remember those. I remember those cold winters. And
sure, you betcha.
Yeah, but it's interesting because you moved from Minnesota to Arizona like I did too, and it's one thing. Like the one thing my wife said when we're watching television and we're seeing all these massive snows coming to the upper Midwest, our first thought that we each have is, thank God we don't have to rake the roof.
Oh, no kidding.
Right? Man. I mean, it was such a common thing to have to rake the roof when the snow would come like that. Very good. Thanks, Tom. Appreciate that. Let me go to Jess, who is in Pittsburgh on Coast to Coast AM as we're winding down open lines. Jess?
Well, how you doing, Ian?
Good. Where are you going to take us?
Yeah, I've been listening to the show for forever now, since Art was on. And my thinking over the years have kind of changed a lot over. I'm a little bit nervous over the phone call. To make a long story short, my daughter passed away at the end of October.
Oh, of last year?
Yes, yes, sir.
Oh, that's just wrong, isn't it?
Yeah, she suffered a 5-year disease. Had a double lung transplant last March, and everything was fine. Everything was going real good. And she moved up from Florida up with me, and it all happened in a matter of 5 days. She was working. Everything was fine. She went to Florida, gave speeches in front of donors to ease them for their loved ones giving organs up to keep the life, and she was heavily into it. And
what a reversal!
Oh yeah, it was terrible. I know you're short on time.
No, and I'm not for this. I'm not. I'm not going to hurry you through this. I'm so sorry.
Yeah, it was pretty awful. And she ended up moving with me, and she lived up here with me probably the last 8 months. She moved in last March, and she passed away in October. Hmm. And she passed, and it was terrible the way it happened. I mean, for me personally, because I'm older, and sure, some of the things at the hospital, I couldn't watch my daughter pass away when they pulled the machinery. I just couldn't. If they were pulling it out, I'd be trying to plug it back in.
Right.
But I was there, but I couldn't be in the room. I'll make a long story short.
No, I get that. I went through this with my dad, and my they're not listening, so I can say this. My two brothers just totally bailed, and so they left me with all of that. And so I was there every step of the way. I know just what you're talking about. It's hard to go from one thing to the next thing. It starts. It looks so surreal to actually be making those steps like that.
Yeah, and so even ever since she passed, I talked to her a lot. And I don't know whether she's listening or not, but I talk to her all the time. And I always ask her, Carl, if you're around, there's certain things, and a lot of people, like my girlfriend thinks I'm a little bit crazy, and I'm not at all. I'm not a crazy bone in my body. Well, I moved into an apartment. I sold my house because the water bills were so high over where I lived at before, and we moved into an apartment dorm. It's 3 bedrooms, and my daughter lived there with me, and that's where
she
they
passed.
Took her to the hospital.
Right.
They took her out of the apartment dorm, and I swore I could. There were subtle things that I thought she was around, and then it turned into the elevator. I'd get 10, 12 feet from the elevator, and I leave at 11:30 at night, and the elevator door would just automatically open up. And it happened two or three times, and there was other things, just subtle things around the apartment that would make you, you know. And I would always bring it up, and I would tell my other daughter, and I went over and over. Well, on the 19th, there was a guest on, and they were talking about, it was a psychic, and one of the issues that he brought up was somebody called about talking to passed away loved ones. And he says, well, he wasn't sure whether, kind of like me, whether there was something there or not. And he said the guaranteed way is to ask them to show you a sign. Right now I'm working. I just pulled over. I'm not delivering newspapers. So I went up the street, and the street cul-de-sac's around, and I come back down. And while I'm doing this, I'm saying, you know, show me a sign. And I'm going, you know, and I'm calling her name, and I'm just saying, you know, show me a sign. So I get to where the street comes. I make the cul-de-sac and come back down the street the way I came up, and you can either make a right or a left. And I look to the right to make sure. I know nothing's coming because I would see the light, but I look anyway because it comes automatic with driving. And as I looked over to the left, there's not a – I'm not going to call it a shooting star. It was a meteor because there was – I've seen maybe four or five over the years. And this is only like 2 minutes after it. It had a green tail sparks and a gold front, and it flashed to the left of me within – it was – it only lasted 2 seconds, but it was only 2 minutes after I
you'd asked for that.
And I was just wondering, do you think that's a coincidence, or do you think there might be something there?
I don't ever want to know. I think
it's.
I'm happy enough just thinking that it's Carly.
Yeah.
Why do we want to debunk that moment? You know.
Yeah. Do you think I'm crazy?
No, I think you're human, and I think that's the kind of connection we need. And I'm sorry it happened to you.
Yeah, I can guarantee within 100% that it was not my imagination.
No, I had no doubt.
And it was only 2 minutes after I that he spoke over the phone to do that I did it, that it happened.
If it was a meteor, Jess, they ought to name it after her, and we'll leave it at that, because we're out of time. But I, you know, I'll be thinking about Carly. Let's all look up in the sky tonight. Look for Carly. Amen. I'm with you. Tomorrow night. Then a story of a different father and mother and daughter. Well, stepmother, anyway. The story of Lizzie Borden. The trial of Lizzie Borden. New research, a new book, and a new guest coming up tomorrow night talking about the trial of Lizzie Borden. And sorry for everybody that we left on hold. We'll get you for another open lines some night. In the meantime, Deus te amat, and I do too.